It's the Ugly American Werewolf in London Rock Podcast with your host, the Wolf and Action Jackson, who are keeping rock alive by talking classic rock, hard rock, progressive rock, heavy metal, 80s music, early MTV, UK versus US chart success, and much more. This is the home of classic album and live concert reviews, and your place for interviews with artists and legends. You're rocking with the Wolf.
Hey out there, rock and rollers. Welcome to episode number 176 of the Ugly American Werewolf in London Rock Podcast. Brought to you by me, your host, Mac B. the Wolf, and I will be joined, as always, by my partner in crime from the East Coast of the United States of America, Gary Action Jackson. And we appreciate you listening to last week's episode on Colin Hay's live performance. A great storyteller, a real troubadour, who has still got a great voice, has amazing songs that he's written over the last 40 years, including some Men at Work songs that you will know and love. And if you did listen, I hope you enjoyed that bit about Down Under that maybe took a little bit of a turn on the lyrics side there, but made for a really fun time at the show. It's a really fun night out, and if you ever have the chance to see Colin Hay live, I highly recommend it, and you can listen to our show to learn more about it. But this week, we've got a special guest that I'm so excited about. Hopefully, you can hear it in my voice, and that's Don Jameson, rock comedian and co-host. And I know that if you listen to the show, you're probably familiar with that metal show. If not, if you're from somewhere around the world, it was on VH1 Classic. It featured Eddie Trunk, who's America's number one hard rock and heavy metal DJ. He's kept the flame alive for hard rock and heavy metal for many, many years. And it was a show that featured two comedians, Jim Florentine and our guest, Don Jameson, who also love the music that we love. And they would have guests on, heavy metal and hard rock superstars. They'd ask them questions. They'd sometimes have guest guitar players on and drummers who would jam on the set. They would have Stump the Trunk, where Eddie would be asked questions by the audience, and if they stumped him, they would give him a little something, a DVD, a CD, a book, something out of Trunk's trunk. And it was just fun, and it helped keep someone who was not in the music industry at the time up on what was going on in the world of hard rock and heavy metal. Also, it introduced people to a lot of bands that maybe have flown under the radar. Many people know Eddie is a huge fan of UFO, and a lot fewer people would understand the greatness of their music if it weren't for Eddie. Don would come on there and not only provide a little laughter, some light moments, but he would also talk about the bands that he loves and thinks people should know more about. And he's got a new album out on April the 19th. It's called No Sleep to McSorley's, which, yes, that's a takeoff on No Sleep Till Hammersmith by Motorhead. The cover used the official graphics from Motorhead, and yes, he recorded it at McSorley's in New York City. I don't know if you've ever been there before, but that's a place where you go to drink. And if you're not actively drinking, you get your stuff and you get out of there. By mandate. They'll kick you out of there if you're not actively drinking. It's a place I went to when I was younger. I don't know if I could hang there anymore, but I would have loved to have been there to see Don's set because it's great. And you can pre-order that now, or if you're listening to this on April 19th or afterwards, you can go pick that up either physically or digitally, however you like it. But Don's a funny, funny guy. We had a lot of fun talking to him, catching up about a lot of stuff, and we're going to go into all that here, talking about his new album along the way. But first, we have a little bit of business to talk about. As always, we like to mention we are proud members of the Pantheon Podcast Network, a family of about 100 different shows, all music-related. There really is something in there for everyone. You can check out more at pantheonpodcast.com or follow at Pantheon Pods. And we have to give a shout-out to our fantastic sponsor, RareVinyl.com, who, although they are based in the UK, folks, they ship all around the world, and they procure record collections from all around the world as well. So if you're looking for that rare Japanese picture disc or import that you've never been able to get your hands on, if you're looking for a first print copy of one of your favorite albums of all time, you're looking for a rare single, whatever it may be, go to rarevinyl.com, find something that you love, and then you can use code UGLY to save 10% off your order. Now, that's a one-time code, but it's not just for one item. You could buy 50 things in one order and get 10% off the whole thing. So do yourself a favor. Don't just buy an $8 single and save yourself 80 cents. Go find all sorts of treasures that you want, that you love, that you've been searching for, that you can't live without. And then use code UGLY and save yourself a big, fat 10% instead of a little, tiny 10%. Your record collection will thank you, and so will we, as it's a big help to our show. Now back to Don Jameson, super guy, funny guy, loves the music that we love. I was so psyched to hear that he would be willing to come on our show to talk about his new album, No Sleep Till McSorley's. So why don't we jump in? I think you guys will like this one a lot. We're talking to comedian Don Jameson about his new album, No Sleep Till McSorley's, right here on The Wolf. So how cool is it to have Don Jameson on, man, co-host of That Metal Show from the VH1 Classic days with Eddie Trunk and Jim Florentine? This is going to be fun, man.
Yeah, I'm excited to talk to him. I'm actually sad we don't have like 3 hours, because that's what it could be. I mean, you figure with that, his comedy stuff, and, you know, the Monsters of Rock cruise, yeah, we could be here for a long time. Oh, what about this? What was this cool when this happened? And I hope comes out in this interview is how big of a fan he is. Like one of those deals, I'm sure he gets paid to go on the Monsters of Rock cruise.
Well, sure, yeah.
But if they told him, hey, Don, for whatever reason, we can't pay you this year, he'd be like, okay, whatever. He'd go anyway.
Just take care of my room and my food. Correct. And we're good. You know, yeah. I would.
Absolutely.
They want us to come and just like do, you know, live streaming for like 6 hours a day. Fine, just pay for our rooms and we're good.
You want to put me on a party, like a 3 or 4 day party? Yeah, that sounds okay to me. And I think, be interested to see too, I think there's like impromptu stuff that happens on that cruise also. Like people are just bored and they're like, hey, let's just play, you know, together a song or a couple songs they know, or
people
just
show up. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's just, they just jam. So that would be pretty cool too.
Yeah, no, yeah. And he's into sports. And I mean, it's got to be great that you could take something that as a kid that you caught shit for, that you caught flack for. Like, what are you doing with a Black Sabbath t-shirt on? Don't you know that Color Me Bad is the best band right now? You know, and he's got to eat, you know, but he turned it into a career. He not only gets to work with like these metal gods that he grew up admiring the same way we do, but he's buddies with some of them now. You know, yeah. It's like, you know, they text each other shit that's going on in their lives, you know?
That's got to be the best part. Is that, you know, you get to know them as human beings and you get a little more into their life than just what's happening on the stage. I mean, that's what it seems like anyway. Like they're always trading back and forth, like on Twitter, you know, happy birthday to, I think Sebastian Bach was the last one that had a big birthday, and mm-hmm. they were going back and forth on that. So yeah, nothing can be cooler than to actually meet these people who are your heroes and then have them accept you as one of their own.
Right. And I feel the metal community and the hard rock community are that way. It's like once they know you're for real, you're not just like some Entertainment Tonight person. So I see you have a new album called 72 Seasons. You know, it's it's the, like, you know, you're like, they find out you're a fan. It's like, oh, I loved it, you know, when you did Ride the Lightning or whatever. You know, like I said, I saw you on the Black Album tour and it was amazing. You know, once they figure out that you're actually a fan, then you're kind of welcomed into the family.
I always imagined, before the show went on, the metal show, like they would sit there, because the three of them would always, it always seemed like they had a competition of who could have like the coolest, most obscure band t-shirt.
Right.
And so I'm sure it's like, oh man, where'd you get that? Wanted one of those for years and I never had it. So yeah, you can tell that they're always trying to outdo each other as far as who's got the coolest stuff.
Well, and they were also, though, I mean, they're a little bit limited on what they can talk about on mm-hmm. VH1 Classic. Like this isn't, you know, this isn't Sirius XM at 3 o'clock in the morning where you could just talk about literally anything you want. You know, it's like,
right,
why don't you play Cannibal Corpse? Like, well, it's VH1 Classic. You right. know, it's there's housewives watching this while they make dinner. You can't just have that stuff on.
You know? Right. And you have to have some kind of audience, not like, right. you know, we're now going to go through 3 hours of songs you've never heard of before from, yeah, death metal bands from Sweden.
Right. You're not exactly.
While it would be an interesting show to watch, probably not the audience share you're looking for.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I would learn a lot, but
right.
You know, when they said preview, we're talking about Goblin Shumfling, you know, what? Yes, it's in ancient Norwegian, and it's...
they're getting ready to release their 23rd record.
Within what? The Arctic Circle at nighttime, and, you know, underground. Like, and they're so heavy. I'm like, it's great, you know.
Yeah, I was listening to the radio, I think this morning on the way out, and they were talking about that band Split Enz that was mm-hmm. Neil Finn's band. It's like, yeah. Oh, here's something off their like 14th record or something they released in 1982. I'm like, what? They did how many of these things? I mean, it wasn't 14, but it was probably 7th or 8th. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, so you got a lot of material there that probably not a whole lot of people have heard.
And that's fine. I mean, you know, that's why I think I have to go back to satellite radio, because terrestrial radio, local radio, was so bad. It hurts my feelings. And it's like, even before I even get out of the driveway, it's like, it's Guns N' Roses again. Mm. Is that all you've got is Guns N' Roses?
No, you know? Don't Stop Believin's coming in probably 5 minutes.
I wish, you know, it was, it's Guns N' Roses, Bon Jovi, Pat Benatar, Queen. And like, that's it. That's like 50% of what they play. Like, what again? So much Pat Benatar. Well, she's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. So are the Rolling Stones. You never play them anymore.
But it goes back to what you were saying about the VH1. Like, they have to. I know this song. This is familiar to me. Like, you can't play weird stuff or the advertisers get mad. At least on satellite, you've got those compartmentalized channels that will play different stuff. Like, you ever listen to that underground radio or garage radio from Little Steven? That's awesome. I don't know any of that stuff, but I'll listen to it.
Exactly. Yeah. Especially if he's got the stories to go along with it, you know,
right. Yeah.
How he found it or why this band is important to him and things like that. And obviously Eddie is on, what is he? Is he on Sirius?
Yeah. Yeah.
Eddie's he's on Sirius.
I think he's on Hair Nation when they turned into Trunk Nation. And, and then you can tell when he's on there, because there's songs that you're like, hey, wait a minute. This isn't in regular rotation. And the same with Jim Florentine. He's got a show on there also where they'll play like a lot more obscure things for him.
Yeah, and they should. I mean, this is what satellite radio I feel like should be for. It's kind of what all radio should be for. I understand drive time. Mm-hmm. It's got to be big hits or weather, you know, traffic, whatever kind of thing to help you get home safely. I understand, but when you've got that many channels, you can let people go down the rabbit holes, right? Mm-hmm.
Hi, my name's Stefan Shirazi from the Metallica Report, and you're listening to the Ugly American Werewolf in London.
Hey, Don.
All right.
Hey.
You're all business. We're recording already.
Yeah, well, Jackson liked to do a little pre-show recording and talk about like how much we dig this person and like how psyched we are to have him on before you come on. So.
Oh, well, thank you. I'm excited to be with you guys. Thanks for having me.
No,
thank
man. It's a pleasure to have you, man. And, you know, we're big fans of you and your comedy. And I have to admit that I came to that metal show late as far as its run goes. But as soon as I found it, I was like, oh, my God, where's this been? You know, I had to watch it every week. And I told my wife, no, we can't go out tonight. The metal show's coming on, you know.
We disappointed a lot of wives over the years.
That's good work. That's good work. You need to keep that up, man. That's awesome. No, thanks. Thanks so much. Welcome to the Ugly American Werewolf in London. I'm Mac B, and this or that or one of these is Action Jackson.
Good to be here with you guys. I guess I'm the ugly American.
Nah, man, I'm the ugly American. It's the ugly American for a reason. And you look like if you would, you know, take some steroids, you look like Roddy Piper, man. You know, you got that look going, man. You're looking good these days.
Hey, thanks, man. I appreciate it. You know, I'm 57. I still have my hair. So, you know, I'm holding on to every strand that I can. But, you know, I actually opened for Rowdy Roddy Piper once on a comedy show.
Did you really?
Yeah. And, you know, I only briefly got to say hi to him before the show started. And then when he was done, he bolted out. And I didn't know till years later after he died, my buddy, who was also on the show, posted something on social media saying, hey, I miss this guy, meaning Rowdy Roddy Piper. I'll never forget how much he giggled when my friend Don Jameson was on stage at the comedy show we did. And I never knew that. He never told me that. And I said, wow, that's something exciting to know after all these years. I didn't know if he had watched me, if he liked me, he hated me, but apparently he got a kick out of me. So that was cool.
That's a great feeling too. Yeah. And it was funny because I was just watching like some wrestling kind of documentaries, and I didn't realize that after Roddy had stopped wrestling, that he did kind of go out and do the comedy circuit for a while. And I said, well, you know what? I bet he'd be a natural at that. I mean, was he pretty good?
Yeah. Well, a lot of the wrestlers are doing, it's sort of a hybrid version of, you know, storytelling.
One man show kind of thing. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of being in character, kind of not. And of course, for that audience, you know, they love it because they want to hear all the behind the scenes stories and stuff. So yeah, that was a wild night. It was at a convention in Atlanta. And I know you guys remember the West Memphis 3. Remember that movie where those kids got arrested in Arkansas?
Yeah, absolutely.
because they liked heavy metal, so they assumed that they were Satanists and murdered this young kid, and they all got let out of jail. But Damien Eccles, who's sort of the most visible one,
right,
was in the audience at that show because he was at the convention. And yeah, you know, it was just, you know, when you do these conventions, it's a weird conglomeration of right. people. So it's like, you know, comedians, wrestlers, West Memphis 3, and but yeah, all good stuff. And yeah, I, you know, again, that meant a lot to me that Roddy dug what I did, so I stole his look.
Yeah, good for you. Well done. Well, and speaking of conventions, you know, I didn't really get to talk to you, but last year it was around this time you were in Nashville for Rockin' Pod with a lot of our crew down there, and I remember you had a line of about 7 people like waiting to see him. So I'm like, you know what, I'll get there in a minute. I'll let those people filter out. I'll say hi to them eventually. And then when I came back, you were like taking a break. You'd split. I'm like, oh, shit, man. I missed Don Jameson. So I'm glad you're here.
Thank you, man.
No sleep till McSorley's, man. Love it. Love it. Thanks for the advanced copy, man. Had me cracking up while I was trying to do my editing the other day. I'm like, oh, God, this is classic, man. And you stuck to the classic, you know, because you did the Denim and Laughter, you know, kind of take on the Saxon great metal album. Now it's the great, amazing, you know, No Sleep Till Hammersmith by the boys in Motorhead. But you're not doing Bomb or Overkill. You're doing your own shit there, man. It's fun.
Oh, yeah, thanks. All my albums are parodies of my favorite rock bands. And so if for the people who get it, it's a bonus. But the content on the inside is for everybody. You know, you don't have to be a fan of hard rock or metal to get what's on the inside. You know, I talk about everything on there. And McSorley's, to me, was a natural fit. Because it's a place, you know, for people who don't know, it's the oldest pub in New York City. Yep. And you sit at these big old wooden tables and they got sawdust on the floor. And you know, they put people from, you know, all over the world to come sit with you at your table. And, you know, you sit and you chat and you drink McSorley's ale and you solve all the world's problems, you know, and yeah. And then you go home. And that's what this album feels like for me. It's like I'm trying to solve all the world's problems and then, you know, try to tie it up in a nice bow at the end with some stuff about rock and roll and yeah. hard rock and metal and all that stuff. You know, that's sort of the happy ending to the album.
Yeah. And if you've never been to McSorley's, folks, don't ask for water. OK, don't say, listen, I need to take a break. I just drank 7 beers. I just need to take a break. No, you're drinking or you're paying and you're getting the fuck out. That's the law at McSorley's, okay? You're drinking or you're out of there. And what's wrong with that?
Well, that's the other part I loved about it is, you know, it's the anti-woke drinking establishment, you know? Yeah. They're not sensitive to people's feelings. If you order a Coke, you might be asked to leave.
That's right.
You know, it isn't like Starbucks where they go, you could just come in and sit down for hours at a time. You don't have to buy anything. No, if you're drinking too slowly at McSorley's, they'll throw you out. So
that's right.
It's the perfect place. And like I said, they do. They sit people at your table. You know, that if there's open chairs, they go, we got people who want to drink. And you sit down and, you know, an hour later, you're best friends with people from Canada. Mm. You're going to Norway next summer to visit these other people. You know, it's like it's the real social media. It's actual socializing, not, you know, 80 people sitting in a bar looking at their cell phone,
which is what it's devolved into.
I was going to say
point.
That's all life is now. It's ridiculous.
Sucks.
Nice to hear Phil Campbell on the way in too.
Well, that was the other thing, you know, the whole concept for the album came from sitting in McSorley's one day with a bunch of my buds who all helped me with the album, who all worked on the record, and saying, you know what, I should do the record here. This is where this material needs to be heard, you know, in front of a bunch of beer drinkers and hellraisers. And, you know, I'm ashamed that it took me 5 albums to do a Motorhead tribute because they really are my favorite band. But it all came together. It was meant to be. You know, I asked the owner of McSorley's while I was sitting there, you know, if I could do the album there. They had never done any kind of performance there. I said, no, we'll build a stage. We'll bring in a PA system.
Cool.
And I said, how much to rent out the room? And she's like, how long you been coming here? I said, 30 years. She goes, you paid enough.
Nice. That's so cool.
So I got it for free. And then I started thinking, all right, it's got to be Motorhead. So No Sleep Till McSorley's. That's done. I emailed Motorhead's manager, Todd Singerman, who's a phenomenal guy, and asked him if I could use the Motorhead font. And he wrote back, anything you want.
Wow.
So I write back again.
Awesome.
Okay, how about the original artwork from No Sleep Till Hammersmith? Thinking he's going to go, okay, you're pushing it a little too far.
Step back a little there, right?
Yeah, exactly, right. But he wrote right back. He goes, done. I'll get you the high-res artwork. And then the last step was, well, the two last steps were, yes, getting Phil Campbell on board, because I always have a guitarist do my intro and outro. And Phil was cool enough to say, yeah, you know, I actually had just been on the road with Phil. So I talked to him about it. And he goes, I'm done deal. And then I renegotiated my deal with Metal Blade, all in 1 hour of day drinking at McSorley's. God bless America.
Fantastic. Yes, that's the America that I know and love. That's for sure. That's awesome. Well, and so speaking of Motorhead, though, I mean, you got to know Lemmy a little bit before he died, didn't you? I mean, what can you give us a good Lemmy story that maybe you haven't heard or we haven't heard before?
Oh, boy. That you haven't heard before? Well, I mean, I think the thing with the fun thing that we did with Lemmy was when we first met him, Jim and I were over in England, and we were there to see the last three dates of the Motorhead Saxon Danko Jones tour. Okay. And it ended at Hammersmith. So we're like, we have to go to the legendary Hammersmith. And then, you know, we were doing that metal show at the time. And VH1's like, well, if you're already over there, what if we send over a producer and a camera crew? And maybe we could set something up with Lemmy and Biff from Saxon. I mean, that'd be great. So we did this thing called Tea with Lemmy. And they put this big ornate, you know, table together with, you know, the centerpiece with scones on it and, you know, that cream and then this ornate teapot. And we all had, you know, the teacups in front of us. And Lemmy came in and he goes, what's all this? I'm like, we're doing, you know, high tea with Lemmy. And he goes, how about we do Jack Daniels with Lemmy? So the tea got poured out of the cups. The Jack Daniels got poured in. And then Lemmy was like, do you ever have a British scone for breakfast? I go, no. He goes, put a lot of cream on it. So here I am putting all this cream on. I'm eating it. I see him later that night after the show at Hammersmith. And he's like, how'd those scones treat you? I go, honestly, I was on the toilet for like 2 hours. He goes, and he just started laughing because he knew my weak American system could not handle that the Jack Daniels and those creamy scones at the same time.
Oh, shit. That's great.
So Lemmy gave me diarrhea is what I'm saying.
Yes, exactly. Are you a pretty big Jack Daniels drinker? Are you a fan?
The only time I've ever drank Jack Daniels was with Lemmy.
Was with Lemmy. Okay, I got you. Cool. All right. That's all good. No worries.
Which is a bucket list thing, right, guys? I mean, you know, a Jack and Coke with Lemmy.
Right.
You know, everything else from here on in is gravy.
Yeah, that's right. No, I quit drinking hard liquor a while back. But if you said you could drink Jack Daniels with Jimmy Page and Keith Richards, I'd be like, pour the shit, man, you know?
Yeah, like I once smoked a joint with David Lee Roth, but I didn't smoke pot, but it was like, but if Dave's going to hand me a joint, of course I'm going to take it.
What are you
going
to do? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, good move. Now, we know that your old buddy, and this comes out, was it April 19th is release date, is that right?
Yeah, No Sleep for McSorley's comes out April 19th, and on all the streaming services, it's available for pre-order, pre-ad, pre-save, pre-come, whatever I don't know what the terminology is.
Of course, yes, but I think that, and we personally are like your buddy Eddie Trunk, in that we like the physical stuff more than just the downloads and that kind of stuff. So it's coming out on CD, right? And it's going to come out on vinyl at some point?
Yes, correct. I just got a shipment of CDs from Metal Blade to my house. So the CDs will be available at the live shows starting immediately. And then, yes, later in the summer, in a few months, I'll have the vinyl available. Because it's just one of those, you got to have a record on vinyl to say you made an album. You know, it's like, I know 80% of it is streaming, but you're just owning air, basically, right? You know, with my voice in it. But I, you know, you guys are like me. We're all the same. I got to have the physical packaging. And obviously, I put a lot of work into the packaging.
Yeah.
For the rock fans.
Yeah. If you're going to have a cover that looks like No Sleep Till Hammersmith, have it on vinyl so people can hold in their hands the same way we did when we were kids, right?
Yeah. CD is just too small.
Yeah. I mean, I still have CDs, but I probably haven't bought a CD in at least 15 years. I only buy vinyl. So, and the back artwork is also No Sleep Till Hammersmith too, except my pictures in where the Motorhead pictures are. So yeah, it's a whole, you know, it's a whole thing. It's, you know, rock and metal is such a visual medium. So you always want to, you know, have something to hold. And and it's artwork too. You know, I have albums hanging up all over my walls and stuff. Yeah. You know, you put them in frames and, you know, it's like ticket stubs. Like, we don't have ticket stubs anymore, and that sucks.
Yeah. And we've talked about this a couple of times about how a lot of the enjoyment that you get from an album is the artwork also. Like, it adds a lot to it. Just, I mean, just, you can just see it and it looks cool and you know that, you know, you're going to enjoy the album also.
Yeah, it's true. And, you know, I, you know, photoshopping myself on that stage with Lemmy and Filthy Animal Taylor and Fast Eddie Clark. I mean, even I look at that and go, wow, that's, you know, that's amazing. I'm standing underneath the bomber. You know, if I was there.
Hell yeah, man. That's so cool. And you're talking about how, you know, metal fans want to see this stuff. Metal fans are also a pretty big community, you know, and once you're in, once they know you're the real deal, then you're welcomed in, right? It's not, you know, it's not like you're on, you know, some local news channel. It's like, oh, so James Hetfield, I see you have this new album called 72 Seasons. Now, what was it like, you know, once they know that you're a real fan and you know what you're talking about, then you're kind of in with that crew, you know? I mean, are there anybody that, like, you idolized growing up and now it's like, yeah, I got him on my cell phone. He wishes me happy birthday, you know, every year or something like that.
Yeah. You know, fortunately, I have a lot of those. I say fortunately, not just for me, but it's just so fortunate that we love this genre of music and we love this scene so much. And 99% of the people in it are so cool and so awesome. And I even said to the guys, you know, when we knew that metal show wasn't going to get picked up again, I go, well, expect to get deleted from a lot of people's phones after this.
Right.
But the truth is, you know, I actually made even more friends in the rock and metal scene afterwards. Like, nobody abandoned us when the show was off the air. And so that's just a testament to, yeah, we all grasp on to, you know, like-minded people, you know, people who are real. When we were doing that metal show, that's what we said before we even did one episode, is like, this has to be the three of us talking openly and freely like we would if we were sitting backstage on some road cases talking to a band after the show. You know, it can't be. One of the things I respect about Eddie, although it does get him in trouble sometimes, is his honesty, you know? But that's the thing. It's like, not everything can be great, right? Not everything can be, this is the best tour ever. This is the best album ever. This is the best show ever. Because then no show is
exactly
great.
It's all bullshit.
No album is great. Now, you don't have to be a dick about it, so we try not to do that. But
well, and that, I think that's what it comes down to, is can you offer constructive criticism? I didn't like it because of this, or instead of just saying it sucks or you didn't like it. And I think that's kind of the same thing I was thinking about, you know, you writing jokes in this era of everybody being offended by everything. God. There's a difference between being mean and, like, breaking somebody's balls. I think that's the big thing, is as long as you're pointing something out that's ridiculous. Like, you've got a whole bit about celebrities and kind of, you know, the talking about that and some things that are ridiculous. That, to me, that's funny because it's true. You put it out there and you're pointing it out. You're not being mean to anyone. You're just shining a light on it.
Yeah, you know, it's tricky because you don't want to be the old guy yelling, get off my lawn.
Right,
but
sure.
you want to make a point, too. Right. So, you know, it's interesting because the crowds have actually gotten better, believe it or not, because all the triggered people stay home.
Right. Good.
You know, they just stay home on their phones and argue with people on social media, you know, instead of coming to comedy shows. If that's how you entertain yourself, by fighting with a guy in Portugal with four followers, that's all right. You know, you probably wouldn't like my show anyway. So the people that come to laugh. And especially after COVID, man, I saw it in people's eyes, man. They were hungry for anything.
They're ready for it, weren't they? Yeah.
Yeah. Just say anything, please, because we can't take it anymore. And also for me, man, you know, like, you know, I'm trying, you know, this is my attempt to make sense of this crazy world we live in. You know, and if I don't make light of it, man, you know, I save a lot of money on therapy doing comedy.
Good work too.
Is that a weird feeling for you when you write a joke and you're like, this is funny, I know this is funny, and it does, for whatever reason, it doesn't hit with the audience, but then you've got something else that you feel is just, well, you know, whatever, and that gets a huge laugh and you're like, I don't get you people, like, what's going on here?
I have jokes on every album that kill, and I still don't understand why. It's honest to God truth. But here's the thing: I get paid to make people laugh, and so I can't take it personally. The thing with bands that's different, obviously, is, you know, bands get together, they write the songs, they rehearse them, and they deem them to be good. And we love these 12 songs, and we put them on an album, and you put them out, and everyone goes, oh, we don't like this. Or, yes, oh, we love this. You know, with a comic, you get that instant feedback every night on stage. Like, nope, yeah. Nope, yep,
oh, that's nope. Good.
So when I put an album out, I know the jokes all work because I've been doing them for a few years, and the audience likes them.
Yeah, and that's the cool part about listening to this record is you can hear the audience feedback, you know, what they like, what they don't like, you know, stuff that you know, they laugh at. Especially when you bring a concept back later in the show and, okay, now we're all into this. And I think you made a comment somewhere that, you know, you're my most, you know, my most juvenile joke gets the most laughs, something like that. You know, it's just like, okay, you like that. Cool. You know, you can tell the laughs are genuine. Like, people are having a really good time at the show.
Yeah. And I even left in a joke that I loved that didn't get a big laugh. I left it in because I think I even said, like, oh, look, I could put the laugh in later in the edit room. Don't worry. I'm not worried about it, you know, and I didn't. I left it exactly as it was, you know, because you do want to keep it as it's the same concept. You want to keep it as real as possible.
Yeah.
You know, that joke just didn't hit, but it was a funny moment. And so you leave it in there because anybody could chop it up and make it a comedy album perfect. And that's why location is such a big thing for me,
huge.
The place that I do it in, because look, obviously this comic's much bigger than me, much more successful, who play to bigger crowds. But sometimes you watch their special or listen to the record and it's like, this could be in St. Louis. This could be in San Diego. This could be in Boston. You know, there's sort of no kind of flavor to the setting. So that's the setting's important to me. Like I said, I wanted to do this in front of beer drinkers and Hellraisers, and that's what I got.
That's awesome. And is it weird when something works in one market and doesn't in another? I mean, maybe it's obvious if something works in New York City versus, say, Oklahoma City. But sometimes you can go from Austin to Houston and you figure, well, this is going to work in both these places. And then it just doesn't for whatever reason. You're like, wow, okay, that's weird.
Well, Austin keeps it weird for sure. That's always a tough market. But I mean, generally, you can do the same jokes pretty much anywhere because of the internet, you know, is now that's the other part of the audience is getting better is now, you know, years ago when I first started, you couldn't really, like, you'd take a chance, really, you know, it'd be like walking into a movie theater that has 8 movies and I don't know, I'll pick this one and it would be random. And then, you know, that's why people would walk out on comedians and stuff. Now they go, okay, Don Jameson's playing in town, and they look at my clips online, which takes 2 seconds to find, and they go, yes, we like this, or no, we don't. And then they can make a judgment on whether to come there or not. And also, comedy's more universal now. You know, I had a whole tour book that got canceled for COVID that I was going to go myself and Biff from Saxon, because he had put out a solo album the same day I put out my album, Denim and Laughter.
Denim and Laughter. Oh, cool.
And, you know, we were going to play the UK, and we were going to play, like, Belgium and France and Germany and Switzerland. And, you know, because American comedy is now getting big all over the world. So, you know, it's really now kind of a worldwide thing. But yeah, there are little nuances here and there, and you figure them out after a while. You sort of go, oh, wow, they're not getting this one here. But, you know, hopefully you have a couple shows in that market and you can adjust. But yeah, it's all good, man.
That's good. Well, I want to talk a little bit about Inside the NFL, man. For our listeners who don't know, you and Florentine did bits on Inside the NFL, which for decades was the gold standard of the midweek kind of NFL show. I'm thinking back to the 90s and the 2000s with Len Dawson, and they had Collinsworth on for a long time. Marino was on there, Ed Modicotti. And I just loved watching it on HBO. It's not there anymore, and it's moved a couple times since you guys were on the show. But that must have been a blast, being able to not only hang out with legends, but also go and take the piss out of these superstars and have a little fun, yeah?
Yeah, well, that's the other love of my life is sports. So, you know, that's the other puzzle piece, where it's like my life has been comedy, rock, and then, of course, sports. So you're right. It was Inside the NFL was the gold standard. And Florentine and I took care of that. we put an end to that. But it was cool. As a Jets fan, as a very sad, miserable Jets fan. I wanted to hate Dan Marino's guts, but man, what an awesome dude. Bob Costas could not have been cooler. Both those guys have such a great sense of humor. And the sketches that, you know, that Jim and I did were really edgy, you know. And a couple of the other guys didn't like it as much, although they were, you know, they were very nice. But Dan and Bob really dug what we were doing. And in fact, we actually did a sketch at Dan Marino's house in Florida. And he was so cool. He took us out to dinner and, you know, we hung at his house and had beers. And, you know, I'm like, man, it's hard to forgive the guy for that, for the fake spike and for murdering my team for, you know, about 20 years. But like I said, man, he's such a good guy. And it was awesome doing that show.
That's awesome. And how did you get, I mean, was that a family thing? Were you indoctrinated into the Jets? Because someone from the Midwest here, I always think like, well, how do you decide if you're a Jets or a Giants fan? Because they play in the exact same building. You know, it's like, I understand why you live in Lowell, you're a Patriots fan, or, you know, you live up in Northern or in Northwest New York, you're a Buffalo fan.
Yeah.
But even if you're from New Jersey, like they play in the same place every other weekend. I never understood why you would choose one over the other.
Probably because the Jets tickets were cheaper. So my dad chose the Jets.
That's a fair reason. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Because you were a Giants fan growing up, weren't you, Jackson?
Between that and the Patriots, because we were kind of in a no man's land, but yet not the Jets. It was hard to root for the Jets.
It's still hard. I'm just hoping Aaron Rodgers lasts twice as long this season.
Yeah. Eight snaps this year. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although there is something to be said for the Jets fan, because, you know, the long suffering, it's easy to root for the people who win all the time. The real fans are the ones that are there year in and year out. And you're right. You know, Aaron Rodgers comes out and 13 seconds later, he's out for the season. You're just like, yep, that's the Jets.
Yeah.
I gave up about 10 years ago, really taking sports to heart. And I enjoy it so much more now, you know, same with my hockey team, same with my baseball team. So, if they lose, it stings a little, but then it's just like, all right, I got other shit to do. I'm a grown man. I'm not on the team. I can't be wasted for 2 days, you know, thinking, you know, taking this to heart. So it makes it a lot more enjoyable.
Good. That's the proper place where it should be, man. I mean, yes, enjoy it. Love it. Root for it. You have no control over it, you know, so win or lose, when it's over, just move on. Yeah. You know, there's always next year, next game or whatever.
This is Uncle Steve from Uncle Steve's Iron Maiden Zone, and you are listening to The Wolf and Action Jackson on the Ugly American Werewolf in London podcast right now.
That metal show's not on VH1 Classic anymore, we understand. But you and Eddie and Jim get together on the internet to do your thing sometimes. Is that still fun to do?
Yeah, well, you know, we were sort of like, well, we could just sit around and sort of wait and hope, or we could do our own thing, you know? So we've been doing a show called That Rocks. And so now it's, you know, it's Jim and Eddie and I from That Metal Show doing That Rocks, which means I've now done two shows with the same guys with names that I hate. Because we never wanted That Metal Show. That was like our last choice, but that's what the network wanted. And That Rocks was the only one out of like 20 that was available. So,
I got you.
You know, but the content obviously is what counts, right? So
that's right.
We had to, for legal reasons, obviously we had to come up with a whole new name, which is not easy. It's like coming up with a band name. It's like, all right, what do we call this thing?
Hardest thing to do in the world, by the way. Hardest thing to do.
Yeah. And so but we wanted to keep it simple. You know, we wanted to be people to be able to find it easily. And then, of course, we had to change a bunch of the segments out or rename them.
Right.
So that people at VH1 did not come after us. So, yeah, we got about 25 or so episodes up there. It's Jim and Eddie and I, like I said. And, of course, the meat of it is usually the celebrity interview, whoever we have in. You know, we've had, you know, Glenn Hughes on and David Coverdale and Sammy Hagar and Michael Anthony. So, you know, we got a bunch more coming up. You know, we have enough to get through the summer. And so, yeah, the three of us, look, we all know where the bodies are buried. We have to be friends. I mean, I have a 15-year text thread I could bury those guys with. So
Well, we don't need to go down that road, man. We believe you, you know. But isn't it nice, I mean, to be able to do this from your home or wherever you are on the road? I mean, I knew it's kind of a cool studio to have in L.A. I think that's where you did that metal show, at least for part of it. But then you'd have to get out to L.A. to do it. Now you can kind of be at home or you can be wherever to do that. I mean, is that better or worse? What are the pros and cons that you like or dislike about that?
Well, obviously it's cool that we have this technology now, so that I could be with you guys today. But yeah, there's nothing like being there face to face with somebody in the same room, because it's a different energy. You know, you could you could pick up on nonverbal cues a lot better, a lot easier. You know, I'm seeing, you know, Jackson from the chest up. I'm seeing you from the waist up. You're seeing me from the chest up. There's other things going on. And also, you know, you could really read reactions a lot better, and conversations, I think, go into different places when you're in the same room together. You could feel, you know, you could feel if someone's getting uncomfortable, or you could feel if someone's really going in a certain direction. So I always preferred doing it. Plus, when we had to fly to LA, you get a lot of frequent flyer miles.
Yeah, nothing wrong with that. Those stack up after a while.
Yeah, if you search it out on YouTube, you can find the extra parts too. And that's pretty cool. Like, you know, a lot of the guys that you would have them come and play the intros and outros, you just stand in there watching them warm up, or, you know, this is how I do this. This is the instrument that I'm playing, the gear that I have. So that's really cool too, that I'm sure you miss it. Just the extra behind the scenes stuff.
Oh yeah. You know, just, you know, the stuff that happened off camera, you know, that people, you know, like when we had Michael Schenker and Kirk Hammett on to jam,
Yeah.
You know, we were there while they were rehearsing it, you know, and, you know, to just be in the room, myself, Eddie, Jim, Michael, and Kirk, you know, and that's it. And watching those guys sort of work out the parts together and, you know, stuff like that. Yeah. Or, you know, walking past Lemmy's dressing room and having him go, "Hey, Don, come in here. Come have a drink. Let's talk." You know, stuff like that. It was like that stuff, you know, is a big part of the experience.
Come have some more scones.
No more scones for me, Jack.
Oh, yeah. I remember when Uli John Roth came on. I'm like, oh, man, that's cool. How the hell did they get Uli on there? You know, he had Craig Goldie on for the Ronnie James Dio tribute thing. You know, I'm like, well, that's badass. I mean, I know what Ronnie means to all of us, really, but to Eddie especially, you know. Now, Eddie has turned the entire world on that he can to UFO, right? I mean, that's one of his jobs on this planet, is to make sure people know there's this badass band. You don't believe him, ask Steve Harris, you know, name UFO. But I gave him credit. I didn't know them. And one day on the show, he said, "You want to know where to start? Here, look, there's a box set of like 4 CDs. It's only $20 or whatever." In that moment, I went to Amazon, bought that, got it 2 days later, listened to it. I'm like, why the hell aren't these guys all over the radio? You know, did that happen to you while you were doing that show ever? I mean, I know you know metal bands well, but did anybody ever come on, or you got aware of somebody, maybe from Eddie, or maybe it was a guest, and you're like, oh shit, these guys kick ass.
Yeah, well, you hit the nail on the head. That was a big part of what the show was about, was not just bring people on and say, okay, you know, here's this person, they have a new album, whatever. It was to turn people on to new bands and old bands that you might have forgot about, you know, or that you never gave a chance back in the day. And, you know, Eddie reignited my love of UFO. You know, I was always a fan, casual fan, but, you know, he got me hyped up about it, you know, and I started going back and re-listening to the catalog and getting into it. And then I think I did the same thing with him, with Thin Lizzy. You know, he liked Thin Lizzy, but then I think there was one season that's all I talked about was Thin Lizzy the whole season. And I got him re-hyped up on Thin Lizzy again. So yeah, the three of us, you know, sort of, you know, learned from each other and turned each other on to new stuff, or stuff that was new to us.
That's fun, man. That's what it's about. I mean, that's what metal is about. You've got this community in hard rock and you want to share it. And it happened with me with UFO. I said, guys, have you ever heard UFO? I was like, what? Whatever. They don't play that on classic rock. I'm like, yeah, it's because classic rock sucks. Look, listen to this. I put in Strangers of the Night, like, well, you're right. This is good. I'm like, well, yeah, what if I could tell you, man? Come on, you know? So it's the music business. What have you learned about the music business that you can share that pisses you off?
Oh, yeah, too much, unfortunately. I can't unsee a lot of, or unhear a lot of stuff. But, you know, I think, you know, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, of course, was always, you know, a bone of contention on the show and continues to be for Eddie. And I think, you know, I think Eddie made a good point about it. Like, I'm not so, I get that they're going to have a wide selection of people going in there. And if you look back, even to the earliest days, they always have. So you yeah. can't say it's like, it's a new thing they're doing. Over the last few years, they always have kept a really wide net on what they consider rock and roll. So for me, it's not so much who they're putting in, it's who they're not.
Yes.
And that's what, that is something that pisses me off. Because if you can put, go ahead, put Missy Misdemeanor Elliott in there, but you better not put Young MC in there before Thin Lizzy, or there's going to be problems. Right.
I know. It pisses me off. I'm like, the Talking Heads go straight in because a bunch of nerds saw them at CBGB's who ended up writing for the Village Voice. But you make Deep Purple wait 20 years, or you make Kiss wait, you know, 15 years or whatever. Rush, you know, one of my favorite bands. Like, you're making Rush wait for what? You won't put Iron Maiden in? Why? Because they don't play enough. They play stadiums around the world on their own 747 piloted by their front man, right? But you're going to put LL Cool J in? What the, you know, and I know you feel the same way, but you're right. It's not like I'm mad that Dolly Parton gets in. I'm just, you know, I'm mad that Iron Maiden doesn't. That's all.
That's exactly the point. So it's like, go ahead and put, if that's what you're going to do, put those people in, but you better be planning on putting Motorhead in there real quick.
Yeah. Let's put Kate Bush in because no one knew who she was until she had one song on Stranger Things. That makes sense. Jesus Christ.
Yep, exactly. So, you know, you shrug your shoulders and you hope they do the right thing eventually.
All right. Well, your album comes out on the 19th of April. Do you have any dates kind of soon after that or stuff that you want to promote or talk about here on the show?
You know, I'm doing a show in Atlantic City. It's an album release party / you know, live stand-up show at the Tropicana. So I'll be there on the 19th. And then on the 20th, I'll be in Fairfield, Connecticut at the Fairfield Comedy Circle.
Okay.
So I guess I'm performing in a circle. I don't know how to do that, but I'll figure it out when I get to Fairfield, I guess.
In the round.
Yeah.
And then have you got a cruise? Is there anything later this year that you're doing?
Well, we just did the Monsters of Rock cruise.
Oh, that's right.
Yep. And, you know, I think that's my 10th one now. You know, Jim and Eddie and I host that every year. And, you know, that's the love boat with STDs. What can I say?
I saw some of the great pics from that, man. It looks like a blast, man. And Jackson and I were riffing a little bit before. It's like, I know it's very scheduled and there's different stages and people go on at different times. Does anybody ever just kind of get up and say, you know what, I'm just going to go sit in with Enough's Enough tonight? Or I'm just, you know, hey, buddy, you want to come and see? And they just kind of play jam together?
All the time. You know, Satriani was on this year and he was very generous with his stage. I know he had Joel Hoekstra come up and play. He had Richie Kotzen come up and play. He had Nuno come up and play. So, yeah, that's all that stuff happens all the time on the ship because every band does two shows and they're there for 5 days. So they got free time if they want to, you know, jump up and jam with another artist. You know, otherwise they're just kind of hanging around waiting to do their next show. So, yeah, you see that stuff all the time and it's incredible.
What about fans, man? Do people feel like because they've seen you on TV or they've known your comedy for a long time, it's one thing to say, hey, man, love your comedy. Good to see you. And it's another for somebody to just come up and start talking to you about your life like you're actually friends, you know, kind of thing. Does that ever freak you out or you ever have to say, okay, thank you, I've got to go now?
No, because I like hanging with everybody, you know, so it's I just see us as one big, you know, floating family. When I'm on the cruise and, you know, even after, you know, comedy shows and people come up and they want to talk about rock or comedy or whatever, you know, I usually end up standing there, you know, I get in these hour conversations with people, you know, about stuff and, you know, I like, you know, I love hanging and talking with people. So it's tough to do that cruise if you're not kind of a social person, you know, and most of the artists are. There's a few who stay in their cabin. You only see them when they come out to do their shows. But for the most part, yeah, like you can sit and, you know, have, you know, breakfast with the guys from Queensryche or if you're really lucky, you could have lunch with Don Jameson. You never know.
Ooh, yes. Hell Hell yeah, man. That's awesome.
I was just looking to see where the Fairfield Comedy Circle is. I'm like, I know about where it is. I used to live right there. So yeah, it's right on the post road. Interesting. Bringing back old memories now.
Cool.
It seems like, but on the cruise, it seems like most of those guys, even though they're in different bands, all seem like they're fans of each other. And so, like, you know, you could be at a show with other guys from other bands watching that show and enjoying it. And that, to me, that's the coolest part. It's one big family.
Always. Yeah. I mean, look, and same in comedy, there's friendly competition. Of course there is. You know, we're all in the same business. We're all vying for the same, for a piece of the pie, for a piece of the crowd, for a piece of the touring system that they have. But yeah, you're right, man. You always see artists watching other artists and legitimately going, man, oh my God, he sounds great. He sounds awesome. This, you know, it's really neat to see that. It's neat to see the levels of geek out at some of these shows, like to see who geeks out over who else, you know? So yeah, it really is. Like I said, it's a real family kind of, you know, it's a big rock family when you're on that cruise, and you got to embrace that, you know, because it makes the trip that much more fun.
Yeah. I mean, you said there are some people that stay in their cabins, and I'm sure that's, they like it that way. But to me, you're missing out just on the camaraderie and just the content that you miss out on also.
Yeah, because it's not another just night on the road and you're about to get on the bus again. I mean, you're here in this ecosystem, man. Why not enjoy it?
Right.
Yeah. And look, the good thing is you always have your cabin if you get a little overwhelmed. You know, I know on this one, you know, when Ace Frehley came out of his cabin, you know, he got swamped, you know, people were really excited for Ace. And, but, you know, we stopped in Cozumel and I got off the boat and Ace was right behind me. He was, you know, so he was out walking around and he was, you know, going out and checking out the sites and getting around. But yeah, he was in high demand. So, but like I said, you always have your, when it gets too much, you're like, hey, I'm going back to my cabin now and just going to chill here until showtime. So that's the beauty of it.
So how satisfying is it to be someone who loved this music when you were a kid, when you're a teenager, right? Had the long hair. Maybe you had to take some shit from people in high school about it.
Yeah.
But now it's who you are as a professional. You make a good living at it. You get to tour the states, the world, and you get to be friends with the people you idolized. Do you ever want to just stick it to some of those high school people? Or if some people come back and you said, hey, man, well done. Good on you.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I don't stick it to anybody. I mean, it just, you know, being able to do this is a privilege enough, you know. So, hey, that's the best revenge, right, is having, you know, being successful. But, yeah, it is nuts. I think back to the early concerts I went to. I would never have known how to get backstage. I would never have known how to meet somebody in any of these bands. Like, I was always amazed. Like, how do people find the backstage door? Like, those things were things that were completely alien to me at, you know, 15, 16, even 17. Like, I wouldn't have had any idea how to do any of that stuff. And now it's just a part of my life. And it's amazing. The one thing is anybody that I've become friends with over the years, there's still a part of me who has such respect and I'm in awe of them as performers. You know, I never lose that part of being a fan, you know, so when I'm with them or when I go see them, I'm always like, wow, this is a person that I really, you know, respect and look up to. And same with comics. You know, I did 10 years on the road with Andrew Dice Clay. You know, Dice was my comedy idol.
Wow.
You know, to have gone to Dice University to learn, you know, how to do comedy in front of wild crowds, you know, I could never replace that. And Dice was one of my close friends, you know.
I can't imagine how cool it would be to learn how to deal with hecklers from Andrew Dice Clay. I mean, from a lot of big communities, comedians would be great. Bill Burr, I think, is great at it. But from Dice would be the shit, man.
Well, yeah, well, he would always laugh because when they would introduce me, I would literally run to the microphone. And he would crack up every time. He goes, why do you run? I go, because if I don't get to that microphone before somebody yells out, you fucking suck, I'm dead. Like, I'm already dead before I say a word. But if I get to that mic and I get that first laugh, I got a shot, you know. Because he takes 10 minutes before he says the first thing. You know, he's lighting a cigarette.
He's a rock star. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. He's taking a drink of water. And he would do it to drive me crazy. You know, he would take longer every time just to make me nuts. Because he knew it was like I had to get to the mic. I go, well, you don't have to open for you. I do.
Exactly. Well, we're glad you do, Don Jameson, man. We appreciate what you do and entertaining us all and helping to keep the rock alive, my brother. You are welcome back anytime to talk whatever you want.
Guys, thank you so much for such a great hang today and really appreciate the support. We will definitely talk again, guys.
Man, that's amazing. Thank you so much, my brother. That's awesome.
Thanks, Mac. Thanks, Jackson, man. Really appreciate everything.
Thank you.
Good luck with the album, man. I'll be getting it in physical form as soon as I can.
Thanks, guys. Be good.
Thanks, Don. We'll see you.
Cool.
Use a condom.
That's hilarious, man. That's fun. Oh, what a fun time to hang out with hard rock heavy metal comedian Don Jameson, co-host of That Metal Show for all those years. Bit of a dream come true for me to be able to hang with one of those guys. Watching That Metal Show was so important for me as I was a corporate stooge, just trying to stay in touch with the music I loved. And it was important to me to getting new music, but also for getting to know bands that I should have known for years, like UFO and so many others that they talked about on that show and interviewed on that show. And it was just fun. And I'm glad they haven't given up. I'm glad they're still doing That Rocks on YouTube. And I'm happy to support Don, because he's hilarious and he loves the music that we love. So go get No Sleep Till McSorley's out April 19th, or download it, pre-save it, whatever you digital people are into. Generally, I feel like if you're listening to our show and you're like me and Action and Don and Eddie, that you're going to want to get the physical copy, because you'll see the cover that is basically the No Sleep Till Hammersmith cover, and it has him interspersed with Lemmy and Filthy Animal Taylor and all the cool stuff on the back. It's a fun package and it's a funny, funny set. So again, that's April 19th, wherever you get your stuff. You can get it on CD at that point too, and I know he's going to have it out on vinyl at some point this summer. You can check out donjameson.com to know what he is up to. He's got dates coming up. You know he's always on the road. donjameson.com. We thank him so much for being on. Hopefully we'll be able to have him on again sometime soon. So we want to know, folks, did we get something right? Did we get something wrong? Did we miss the point? Did we leave out your favorite part? You have to let us know. You got to email us. It's uglyamericanwerewolf@gmail.com. You let us know the bands, the albums, the concerts, the DVDs, the books, the rock and roll comedians that you want to hear from on the show. Make sure you download and subscribe wherever you get your podcast to make sure you don't miss an episode, as we have some great stuff coming up, some more great guests like Don in the works. And if you're thinking about it, hey, please give us a positive 5-star review. It just helps us find more rock and rollers like you, helps us grow the show, helps us get more killer guests like Don Jameson. Thanks as always to Pantheon Podcast for making us part of the family. And thanks to our sponsor, RareVinyl.com, where if you use the code UGLY, you can save 10% off one entire order. That's it for this time, folks. Lots of good stuff coming up in the show. So to all you rock and rollers all around the world, be cool and keep doing what you do to keep rock alive.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's fantasypoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. Fantasypoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.